Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on school closures in Indiana due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The state is changing its high school graduation requirements for the class of 2020. Jobless claims across Indiana surged to more than 120,000 last week. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Victor Garcia, Executive Director of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana. He'll share the latest on emergency support in response to COVID-19. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana K-12 schools will not reopen this academic year as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. The State Department of Education ordered schools Thursday to develop plans to prepare for the long-term fallout from that decision. State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says those, quote, continuous learning plans due April 17th will help the state figure out how kindergartners through high school juniors will earn the credits they need to eventually graduate.
What are we going to do with that skill gap that obviously has come over the last few months and will continue on through the end of the year? And then our concern again is summer into next fall. But our goal is to look at our resources, understand our capacity so that we can address those gaps.
McCormick urges local schools to finish out as many courses as possible this school year. But she acknowledges that distance or virtual learning is impossible for all districts and students.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Gary Community School Corp has released a statement regarding school closures for the remainder of this academic year. Here's Director of Communications for the school district, Chelsea Wintington.
A message from the Gary Community School Corporation. On April 2nd, the state of Indiana announced that schools would be physically closed for the remainder of the academic year. Undoubtedly, the announcement that school will continue virtually for the remainder of the year is disappointing on many levels. However, the health of students and staff is our first priority. As the coronavirus continues to spread at an alarming rate, it is our hope that our students and staff are taking every precaution to stay safe and be well. Meanwhile, the district remains committed to providing educational services and other needed resources to our students. We are expanding our e-learning curriculum, as well as developing a plan for the rescheduling of events and ceremonies for later in the year. In the meantime, our hearts go out to our school community, and we thank the students, families, administrators, teachers, and staff for coming together to make our new norm work. For regular updates on the Gary schools, visit www.garycsc.k12.in.us and follow the Gary Community School Corporation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The state reports initial unemployment insurance claims surged to more than 120,000 in Indiana last week. The Times reports the new claims released Tuesday by the Indiana Department of Workforce Development represents a more than 50-fold increase from just 2,312 2 weeks ago. More than 1 in 20 Hoosier workers have lost their jobs since the coronavirus pandemic idled restaurants, bars, and other businesses. Governor Eric Holcomb has told non-essential workplaces to close and ordered Hoosiers to stay home from March 24th through April 30th except to buy food, obtain health care, or perform other essential tasks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A new federal law gives states the ability to open up their unemployment insurance benefits to self-employed workers. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it could take weeks before Indiana receives guidance on how to actually implement that change.
The CARES Act makes self-employed workers and independent contractors eligible for pandemic unemployment assistance. They could get money to compensate for full or partial unemployment or an inability to work due to COVID-19. But states can't offer the benefits until they get specific information from the Federal Department of Labor. Josh Richardson is the chief of staff at the Department of Workforce Development. He says in the meantime, the agency is doing everything it can to prepare based on past disaster unemployment programs.
Ultimately, we won't be able to really start putting together the operational work to implement these programs until we see that guidance from the federal government.
Through the federal law, all recipients of unemployment benefits can also get an additional $600 per week until the end of July. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana officials say the state's capacity to test people for COVID-19 is increasing, even as the growth in testing slowed over the last few days. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says some of that is because the state can't control when outside labs report their testing numbers. She says she's confident testing is increasing.
I can just tell you that I know that we had Deaconess Hospital come online with testing. We have individuals working at Purdue University to get more testing. We have the new lab in the northwest part of the state that is doing testing.
President Trump recently said he hadn't heard from any governors recently about a need for more tests. Governor Eric Holcomb says he's always asking.
Every time I talk to anyone, I say, we need more. Pour it on. We're not content right now. We can always use more.
Indiana limits testing for people who are hospitalized, healthcare workers, first responders, and frontline essential workers like grocery store cashiers, and now symptomatic people who are in high-risk categories, including pregnant women.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The coronavirus crisis has had a big impact on Indiana 211. The phone and text service connects Hoosiers with resources, and it was swamped last month. Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett reports.
At the beginning of March, 211 was getting several hundred calls a day, about the same rate as a year ago. Then the coronavirus hit Indiana. On the 18th of March, the service got nearly 25,000 calls. This was after Indiana's first COVID-19 case and after many school districts had closed. Catherine McNaughton is interim state director for 211. She says most callers want information on food, housing, utility assistance, health care, or income support. A national hotline saw a big increase in March, too. Calls and texts to the Federal Disaster Distress Helpline jumped eightfold in a month, according to reporting from Columbia Journalism Investigations and the Center for Public Integrity. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Carter Barrett.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Farm Bureau is working to set up alternate health care options for its members after successfully lobbying for a state law to allow it. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, the organization aims to roll out the plans towards the end of this year.
The health benefits plan will model after Tennessee Farm Bureau's, rolling out options in the fourth quarter this year and going into effect in 2021. Indiana Farm Bureau Director of Public Policy Katrina Hall says there's still a lot of details to work out, but the thought is to use an already established network in the organization for distribution.
The distribution network will be through Farm Bureau insurance agents that are across the state, and those plans are yet to be finalized, but that's our delivery mechanism that we've identified so far.
Hall says the success of getting the legislation all the way to the governor's desk and signed into law came through the effort members put in at the State House. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The ACLU of Indiana wants the state to release some jail and prison inmates at risk for COVID-19. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the Holcomb administration didn't indicate it would do so.
The ACLU's petition to the Indiana Supreme Court says prisons and jails are particularly vulnerable to virus outbreaks, and it's urging the state to, at least temporarily, release jail and prison inmates who are in high-risk categories for death from COVID-19. The ACLU's recommendation suggests that could apply to people awaiting trial who don't pose a risk to the community and offenders whose sentences could be reduced or suspended. Department of Correction Chief Medical Officer Dr. Kristen Doss would only say the agency is taking all precautions.
Our team will continue to look at what we're doing and respond as appropriate.
The State Health Department is visiting jails and prisons to monitor potential outbreaks. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Small business owners are expected to be able to go to banks to apply for emergency Paycheck Protection Program loans intended to cover payroll that were created in the $2 trillion stimulus package Congress passed last week to mitigate the damage the coronavirus pandemic has done to the economy. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act includes the $349 billion Paycheck Protection Program aimed at helping distressed restaurants and other businesses cover payroll and other operating expenses during the public health crisis. Businesses can get needed capital that's 100% guaranteed by the Small Business Administration without any fees, collateral, or personal guarantees. The Times reports payments on loans of up to $10 million with an interest rate of 0.5% are deferred for 6 months. Most importantly, the SBA will forgive the amount covering the first 8 weeks of payroll costs, rent, utilities, and mortgage interest. Business owners can go to any SBA-approved lender, bank, or credit union in Northwest Indiana or the nation to get approved for a loan on the same day to provide working capital during the coronavirus pandemic. For more information on the Paycheck Protection Program, visit sba.gov/coronavirus.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is changing its high school graduation requirements for the class of 2020. That comes after the state Thursday ordered all schools to remain closed for the rest of the academic year amid the COVID-19 pandemic. State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick says the requirements will be a little more flexible to reflect the current crisis.
So if they were enrolled for the second semester, and again, 75% of the school year was completed, but for second semester, if they were enrolled in a course, they will get credit. That will be recognized.
The state's guidelines say high school seniors must also participate in any virtual or remote learning that their local districts have required since schools closed last month. They do not have to pass those courses, however.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana will receive millions of dollars in education funding under the Federal CARES Act, the stimulus package to help mitigate the economic impact of COVID-19. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, officials in the state says it's appreciated, but will likely have to be just the start.
School funding is still pretty normal right now, but executive director of the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, Denny Costerson, says schools will likely face a number of unknown financial changes and challenges in the coming months, and he says the new federal funding will help schools navigate that uncertainty.
It would be nice to know that when we get to August, we got schools open and everything's fine and we're moving forward. No one can predict that.
Indiana will receive the education funding two ways, a $60 million grant for higher education, K-12, and early childhood education, and schools will receive $215 million to be dispersed based on low-income student enrollment. But Costerson says that will likely have to be a first step. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Victor Garcia of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana.
The Food Bank of Northwest Indiana has come out with a request for support to help deal with the COVID-19 response. And we have with us to talk about it, Victor Garcia. He's the executive director of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana. Mr. Garcia, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thanks for having us, Chris. We appreciate it.
Well, tell us first the situation that we are now facing, as well as what the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana is facing, and why you're looking for help.
As many of your listeners are well aware, the COVID-19 crisis is a evolving situation, not only across our country and the world, but specifically here in Northwest Indiana. Lake County in particular is one of the harder hit areas for confirmed cases in the state of Indiana. And while we are being asked to implement social distancing standards and the governor's request for a shelter in place, we're seeing an increase in individuals who have lost employment, especially hourly workers, who normally would not need food support from the food bank and our 113 partner agencies. And that is creating an increased demand and need for food supports here in Lake and Porter County. Mm-hmm.
I know the request is also going not only for help, I guess, to provide the food for folks that need the help the most, but also you're looking for assistance from the community as well to be able to help pay for all of this.
That's correct. So what we're seeing is a significant increase, and we're expecting around a 50% increase in demand above the 6.1 million pounds of food that we distributed in 2019. And that's going to translate to around $150,000 in additional funding just to meet this need. So one of the struggles we're having is a lot of our pantries and soup kitchens, the soup kitchens converting over to drive-through grab-and-goes, are experiencing difficulties of their own, as most of them are being driven by volunteers who are termed a little bit of higher risk to serious illness based by CDC guidelines. So some of our pantries and food distribution partners are either limiting hours or closing altogether during this crisis. And what that is doing is it's creating an increase in demand for the food bank itself to ramp up our own distributions. So we're going to be doing some more stuff. We have one of our premier programs is our mobile market, and we go out into the community in Lake and Porter County, bring out a truck of food, and are able to provide groceries for those who are in need. Normally, we do that on Wednesdays and here on site at our food bank office at 6490 Broadway on Fridays. But we're going to be expanding that with mobile market minis and increased mobile markets. So we plan to be out in the community Wednesday through Sunday, providing some form of food assistance. It might be to 75 households or up to 500 households, depending on what capacities we have on that day and what product we have. A lot of what we do here at the food bank is capture retail donations from our retail partners. But as I'm sure you're aware, Chris, a lot of our retail partners are selling out of their product. So we're having a decrease in our donated product from our traditional network. However, we're showing a significant increase in donated product, specifically produce and proteins from partners like large food service areas like our casinos and some other areas that we're providing product to our school partners. So we're getting a lot of product at the moment that needs to get pushed out into the community. So at any given distribution, we're not 100% sure what we're going to be giving out at the time, but we know there's people out there who need good, healthy, nutritious foods, and we're able to meet that need.
Obviously, you're concerned most about families, multiple-sized families, where their youngsters normally who would get help at school with reduced cost lunches and breakfasts in some cases, but they don't have that because schools aren't in session, so that means they're at home with the rest of the family. But also, you have seniors that have their own specific problems too, don't they?
They do, they do. And we operate the state's largest senior box program normally, that is the commodity supplemental food program. And we can onboard around 1,300 seniors in that program in Lake and Porter County to provide around a 30 to 50 pound box of food monthly. Now, seniors have to enroll in that program and qualify, and unfortunately, we've reached capacity for that program. So to meet the increased need for seniors who are at higher risk, and might be sheltering down in their homes, we're going to ramp up a senior food box delivery program. However, we are limited in capacity, so we're currently serving our wait list for our CSFP program. And as we find funding to increase that service, we'll be expanding that based on our wait list for senior box delivery. Now, the key here is that identifying and sourcing that food and then leveraging our fleet of volunteer drivers to pack that product and deliver it to those homes, leaving it on a porch so that there's no contact between our volunteer driver corps and the individuals who need that support.
We're talking with Victor Garcia. He's the executive director of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana. The Food Bank of Northwest Indiana is very busy these days helping provide food for family members and seniors and other individuals that need the help the most because of the COVID-19 epidemic that's underway, pandemic, we should say. We note, too, that you're asking for some assistance financially as well to, I guess, help be able to keep things going with the housekeeping, so to speak, there at the food bank and be able to get all these items out to everybody, too.
That's absolutely true. So we have two issues. A lot of people are asking what supports we need, and a lot of what we need right now is financial support. The federal government has allocated temporary emergency food assistance program supports to us. So we've got the food right now. It's getting the food out to the community that we need some help with. And that means to keep everybody safe and healthy, we want to prepackage our product as much as possible, which is bagging them or boxing them. And to give you an idea, Chris, a box, just the box, the cardboard box is 82 cents each. That doesn't include the cost of putting the food in the box or the expense of warehousing and storing our product. We have a 72,000 square foot facility here. To give you just a general idea, our NIPSCO bill here is somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000 a month. So just to keep the lights on is extremely expensive. But those boxes are 82 cents each, and if we're serving 100 seniors with a box delivery, you can imagine how quickly those expenses will add up. Now, in addition to that, we had a strong partner in AARP in sourcing staff for us to work as our custodial crew here in the warehouse. But some weeks ago, AARP pulled their staff, and rightfully so. So we're relying more on volunteers right now and outsourced outside vendors to keep up with the cleaning systems here so that we can make sure that we're being as safe as possible and sanitizing our equipment, sanitizing our offices, and making sure that we're keeping not only our volunteers and donors safe, but also our staff, because the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana will not shut down, and it's critical that our staff stay healthy.
Now, Victor, if anybody would like to help out, how can they do so? And we're talking not only as about financial help, but help otherwise in staffing if you need the help in certain areas. How can folks get hold of you and let you know about the needs?
The best way they could do that is to go to our website at foodbanknwi.org, or they can go to our Facebook page and other social media outlets. I will say that there's opportunities there for volunteerism. We are looking specifically for volunteers who are not at CDC high risk, and we are limiting the number of volunteers that can help us at a given time. So we have teams of five working at one time so that we can keep everybody safe and healthy. Financial donations and food donations or other donations, for example, 18th Street Brewery just donated two cases of sanitizer to us. Any of those kinds of donations can also be made through our website and our distributions. This is the most critical thing, Chris. Mm-hmm. If you are in need of food support, we are here for you. Please be keeping up with our Facebook page and our website with up-to-date information on potential changes in service at our partner agencies, but more importantly, where we are going to be with our mobile market distributions throughout Lake and Porter County.
Victor, thank you for your help today, and we'll get the word out. And if there's more, let us know. And for people that would like to find out more, just go on to the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana website or the Facebook page, and they can find out the information there. Thank you for being with us, and hope that you all there at the Food Bank are doing your best to stay safe and helping encourage folks to do the same out there.
Likewise, Chris. Thank you so much.
Victor Garcia is the Executive Director of the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.